Welcome to the Guitar Freaks Podcast, where we turn beginning guitar players into guitar freaks. This podcast is sponsored by Fret Deck. And now your host, Justin Comstock.
Welcome to the Guitar Freaks Podcast. This is your host, Justin Comstock. I am super pumped to have Alan Nemo from King King on the podcast today.
It is an honor to meet you, Alan. I have been a fan for a long time.
That's a nice thing to hear, man. Thank you very much. All the way from Salt Lake City, too.
Yeah, all the way from Salt Lake City.
Brilliant, man.
That's pretty awesome. I have to say, I remember your album, 2013, I believe, Standing in the Shadows, came out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's when I found that album, and I couldn't stop listening to it. I still can't stop listening to it.
So you're the one.
Yeah, I'm the one. I'm the guy. Get all those checks in the mail.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was album number two.
Yeah.
You know, so, and here we are on, what is this one? This is number five, I think. Yeah. So, full steam ahead, man. We're getting there.
It's been quite a journey for you guys, hasn't it?
Do you know, it has been a bit of a journey, actually. It's been one of those things where, even from the very beginning, when we first put the band together, when the old bass player Lindsay and I put the band together, and it just seemed like there was, like, every day there was a new challenge. You know, something was put in front of us. There was always an obstacle. There was always some difficulty. But, you know, we just endeavoured to overcome, you know, and we just kept on going. And I think it was the determination that we had in us to make it work.
Yeah.
That it gave us the strength to keep going, and we just seemed to go from strength to strength there as well. And quite often, to be perfectly honest, with no outside help, we were kind of, to be honest, we were left alone. And for some reason, I used to think that, people don't want to help the band. Nobody wants to give us any sort of support. But then I started to think that, you know, we were such an in-house band, we were such hard workers, that I think people often looked in at King King and saw, you know, the perception that we created, and thought, these guys don't need anyone to help them.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
They're doing all right by themselves. But, you know, really, we were like, come on, someone help. Yeah. But you know what? We carried on and we got there.
I get the sense that you guys, all of you guys, have put in a lot of hard work. It's evident on every single album, Alan. Yeah. You know, every time I listen to an album of your guys', I'm just like, there's a lot of work put into this.
You know what? It's one of those things that we always had in mind. We always had the attitude of, you know, it all must be about the detail must be taken care of. Every detail is no matter how big or small, is equally as important as the next.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I learned that from watching, you know, I would watch documentaries on bands like the Eagles or Tom Petty. Mm-hmm. You know, and these guys were all talking the same language. These guys were all talking about, I remember one instance in watching something, an Eagles docu, and they were talking about having a week-long debate on one word.
Wow. On a lyric.
Like, it's got to be the right, everything's just got to fit just right. Mm-hmm. And the same, Tom Petty was a very hard-working guy. It's the same thing, he just everything was in the detail. And yep. I think that's the key. If you put the work into every aspect from start to finish, then that, you know, you can't not be successful with that.
Yeah, no, and it's evident.
But you also have to have the music.
Yes, yes, yes.
You've got to have the songs. If you've not got the songs, you're wasting your time.
Yeah, the songwriting is important, and then you know, crafting the you know, recording experiences comes next, huh?
Yeah.
I'm curious, Alan. What guitar players influence you in the very beginning?
Oh, very, very easy to answer that.
Oh, yeah.
I was about 10 years old, and my mother put a record on for me at home, and she often would do this. She would often put records on and sort of, like, she would, like, breeze past me, you know, and then she'd give me a little nudge and go, like, just go and listen to this. I'd be like, you know, fighting dinosaurs or something, you know, playing with toy cars. Like, yeah, all right. And I heard Fire and Water by Free, and okay. Paul Kossoff's guitar tone just blew me away. And wow. He's probably been my biggest influence to this day. Paul Kossoff. And of course, then after that, you know, I got into different guitar players. You know, I loved Eric Clapton's playing. Yeah. I got into blues music. I loved Muddy Waters, T-Bone Walker, B.B. King. Yeah. I got really into Ronnie Earl at one point for a long time. I was really keen on that. I mean, but from playing that, you know, that shuffle blues from Ronnie Earl and Dave Spector and those kind of guys to Steve Vai.
Yeah.
You know, Passion and Warfare. I bought the Passion and Warfare picture disc vinyl album when it first came out, and I was blown away by it. I mean, and I got into Steve Vai by accident because I watched the Crossroads film with Ralph Macchio from the Karate Kid, and Ray Cooder and Steve Vai playing that. I was like, wow, this is amazing. So I mean, I've got a massively varied taste in players. From Steve Vai to T-Bone Walker, I mean, right across the board. I mean, I thought Prince was an amazing player as well.
Absolutely. And it's on your albums, all of them, you can hear it in your playing. It's the blues and that rock, and you just smash together and it totally kicks ass.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess that kind of came from listening to guys like Angus Young. From AC/DC and Dave Gilmour from Pink Floyd. I mean, I remember the Comfortably Numb solo. I just used to play over and over and over in my bedroom at night, you know, and I realized later in life how much of an influence that one guitar solo had on my entire playing technique.
Yeah. I have to say
in there and loads of things I do.
So awesome. I have to say, AC/DC, man. I mean, I had the opportunity to see them in concert, blew me away.
Yeah.
Back on the Stiff Upper Lip tour, I was like, oh my goodness.
I saw that too. Yeah, they came to Glasgow at Hampden Football Stadium, and myself and the bass player in the band now, Xander, we both went to that concert. Uh-huh. It was just amazing. I mean, my brother bought me a video of AC/DC, a live show from Paris in 1978, before Bon Scott died. And that was when I was a kid, and I just to spend nights in my bedroom just playing along to it, you know, like. And I always felt that Angus always claimed he was a Chuck Berry fan, which of course he is, you can hear it. But I also felt that he had a little bit of Kossoff in him as well.
Yeah.
All the very similar scales, same kind of vibrato and all that. But I never really claimed to be a Kossoff fan, but I'm convinced. I'm convinced he was lying when he was saying no. Yeah, you are.
That's awesome. I love it. I'm a blues player, and I feel it's important to pay respects to the people that got us here. They got us here, right?
Absolutely, man. Someone asked me this actually, funnily enough, last week. I was doing another interview for another magazine, and he said to me, "Do you think blues is still relevant, and should it be?" And you know, it's like I almost felt like saying, "What a dumb question." Of course it's relevant. Of course,
absolutely.
It's important. You know, this is where it all came from.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have Jimi Hendrix or Eric Clapton or anybody else that came after that if you didn't have blues. You know, if it wasn't for Buddy Guy, we wouldn't have had Clapton, or Freddie King, we wouldn't have had Clapton. If it wasn't for Freddie King, Buddy Guy, you know, if those guys hadn't had Muddy Waters, T-Bone Walker or B.B. King or any of those guys, you know, it all started back at the beginning with these guys.
Absolutely.
And of course it's important, man. I love blues and I always will. And no matter what we're writing as a songwriter, no matter what we're playing as a band, blues will be here, man, forever.
It's stuck in our souls. I can't get it out.
When it gets you when you're young, I think it chooses you, you know, in a sense. You know, and it's in there and it never goes away. Yep. And you know what? I couldn't be happier about that. Because every now and again, I'll just stick on the Red Devils or, you know, T-Bone or Muddy and just like, and then you think, oh, yeah, that's how you do it. No one can do it like that.
No, it's amazing. I've been on a B.B. King listening spree and I've been buying all of his vinyl records and I just can't stop.
It's amazing, man. Some of the live stuff was so good, man.
Oh, yeah. And you learn something every time. That's what I get from blues, is you can learn something every time you listen to an album. There's always something to learn. It's beautiful.
Every time you think that, you know, you've kind of like you've mastered that style, then you'll stick on the same record you've been playing for 25 years and there'll be something else there that you go, oh. What's he done now that I've missed?
Yeah. It's totally how it is.
But not just from a guitar playing point of view, but I learned particularly so much about how the band plays from guys like this, you know, from these bands, you know, how the players arrange things, how the drummer and bass player linked, you know, how it all came together, and you know, and I ended up becoming a reasonably popular blues shuffle drummer at one point because I was so keen on that side of things. I was so interested in the rhythm section of the band being seriously tight and having it slick and good and you know, just playing it properly. And all that stuff's so important, and it makes up, you know, from the ground up, if you get the guys behind you doing it right, they make you look better.
Absolutely. So awesome. I love it. I'm curious. We talked a little bit about guitar. You sing as well, and it's amazing. I love it. Who were some of your inspirations with singing, for singing?
Well, again, easily, you know, when that first record came on that day, you know, once I heard the guitar tone, and then a voice appeared, and it was Paul Rodgers. And yeah. So, you know,
amazing.
Paul, so from listening to Free and then into Bad Company, I mean, I got seriously into loads of singers like that. So I mean, then you found like guys like David Coverdale were kind of emulating Rodgers a little bit, Danny Bowes from Thunder. But then I started getting into different kind of singers as well. I mean, you know, Wilson Pickett, Otis Redding, you know, those kind of soul singers were what I mean. Tom Jones was just was tremendous. You know, all these guys and all that kind of different influence in singers. So it wasn't just the rock guys or the out and out blues guys. I mean, I think we forget possibly sometimes how great a singer B.B. King was.
Yeah.
Especially in his younger days. He had if you listen to very early sort of 50s B.B. King when he's playing his Telecaster, he sings like an old crooner. It's amazing. So there's so many singers like that, you know. And even, you know, like, you know, women like Aretha Franklin was like, I listen to her voice and I think,
yeah,
no one's touching that, you know.
No,
no one's getting near it, you know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, like, but you know, in recent years, you know, guys like Chris Stapleton have just come along, and just you know, it reaffirmed my faith in the future of music. Really, you know, this, you know, it's like, wow, there's a singer like that now who's just so natural. I went to see Chris in Glasgow at a venue called the Hydro, which is a huge arena, and it was during the Country to Country Festival. And you know, when you're in a huge venue like that, and there's maybe 15,000 people there, there's a certain type of song and everything else. There's a way you've got to perform to try and command that audience. He stood there with an acoustic guitar and no one else, and it was like he had the entire audience in the palm of his hand.
Yeah.
You know, it was amazing to watch. I couldn't believe what I was seeing with just the power of such a great, honest, passionate voice.
Yeah.
Who can also sing like a mofo.
Amazing. It's, I love that you just take so much time to honor all the artists that you love and inspire you. It's I think it's very important as artists to do always, you know.
I mean, without grateful. These guys, we wouldn't be here, you know.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, these are the influences that shape who we become as well, you know, not just as you know, what we choose for a career and whatever else, but you know, that type of music, certain types of music, certain genres, certain songs, certain singers, certain lyrics, you know, they make you who you are. They, you know, things just touch somewhere and influence your life.
It's amazing.
Why not? And you know, all the respect in the world to all these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. Well, tell us, Alan, Tell us about...
I could feel a strange question coming on here.
No, it's actually not very strange. Tell us about your latest, your upcoming release, Maverick.
You know what? Maverick was... it's going to be remembered for a long time because we were making the album as the whole sort of the whole COVID-19 pandemic thing was just kind of coming around, and we were kind of like, you know what, guys, something real bad's going to happen here soon, and you know we need to get this finished before we all get locked up in our homes. And we raced and raced, and but without trying to rush anything, we found an amazing formula, a process, if you like, for writing songs. Right here where I'm sitting, there's a little flat that I keep, and myself and Johnny, the keyboard player, would sit here night after night just hanging out with a piano across the table and an acoustic guitar in my hand, and we just wrote the songs, and we used the computer to build the tunes. Basically, we sort of got on board, two of us sort of scratching each other's heads trying to work out, how do you do this? how do we want this technology? Well, I'm looking for my hammer and chisel, thinking, right, this will make it work. but it came together really well. And then we got in and we got recording, and the guys in the band have just done an outstanding job for me. I can't thank them enough for the effort they put in and the professionalism that they used, and their talent as well. And of course, the young chap, and he's a 22-year-old engineer who mixed the album, who was just, you know, kids these days, man. They're so clever. They know everything. And they're so at one with technology, you know, and it's amazing to have because it's a great help. But, you know, what the results we got from the album were just, I'm so pleased with. It's the best work I've ever done. I'm so happy with it. But at the same time, the next album's going to be even better.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
It's just inspired us to think, right, okay, look at what we did, what kind of process we used, how we viewed, how we approached the songs, as we were writing them. I wanted this time to get back to basically kind of doing what King King do best. I think, to be, you know, if truth be told, the previous album, Exile in Grace, I was probably trying a little too hard to join in with the rock market, which, you know, which is fine. I mean, because I'm a lover of rock, but,
yeah,
you know, at the end of the day, I don't have a rock voice. And I think, you know, I had to discover that and admit that to myself. I had more of a soulful voice. Mm-hmm. So let's make the songs about that. Let's get the best out of my voice,
yeah,
and do what I can do best. So I managed to turn it around and write songs that I thought were doing justice to me and the band. And I hope that comes across, you know, because none of it was with any sort of, you know, there was no sinister plan in mind. You know, I wasn't Dr. Evil and like, oh, I don't know what else. You know, it was just like, I just wanted to do what was best for the band and what was best ultimately for the fans to hear, because I think if they hear what we do best, then they can relate to the music just as much as we can. So yes. I think that was what, and I'm so pleased with how it's turned out. And I can't wait for people to hear it now.
Oh, I've been so excited. You released your first single, I Will Not Fall.
Yeah.
And I knew it was going to be good because I've just loved every single album you put out. And I put in my headphones when that came out, and hearing the keyboard in the beginning. What is that, a Rhodes?
Yeah.
Is that a Rhodes? Yeah.
Rhodes, yeah. Uh-huh.
Listen, and I love Rhodes.
Oh, sorry, it's not Rhodes. It's the other one. It's the
some electric piano.
Yeah,
it sounds awesome.
When it comes back, I'll ask him.
We're guitar players. We don't know that.
One of those things. Yeah, it's got keys on.
When I heard that, Alan.
Wurlitzer. Wurlitzer. That's what it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wally. Yeah.
I had it in my headphones. I started listening to that to the beginning, and I'm like, oh. And then I hear the band come in, you know, with the guitars and the bass and the drums, boom, boom. And I'm just like, oh, I am so pumped up.
Amazing.
So pumped up. And I started listening to the lyrics and I'm like, this song is inspiring me to get through something that's tough. This song is inspiring me to work harder at whatever, whatever I'm doing. That's how I initially felt with the song. I know everybody has their own.
Well, do you know what, man? That's so great because to me, that is success to me. That is, it's not, you can keep the money, you know, all that other stuff. It doesn't interest me. It's like when something I sat on the edge of my couch or my bed writing, you know, or sitting at night, just sort of with a pad, just doodling lyrics. And then for it to mean something like that to people eventually is just truly for me the best success you can get. It's, you know, there's nothing better than that. There's nothing to touch that. There's not a drink or drug can beat that, you know, not anywhere. And you know, things like that have been happening. So fortunately for me, this happened a few times, you know, like over the years. There's been a one of the songs that I did with my brother years ago. For example, two people used to come and watch the band separately and they didn't know one another. We played that song. The both of them loved the song. The lyrics meant something deeply to the pair of them. They ended up getting together as a couple and had that song playing as their first dance at their wedding.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, cool. You know, there's you can't top that, you know.
No.
It doesn't matter what you do from then on. You know, it's fine. Everything's just cool. You know, so that kind of thing's great. And you know, the version of I Will Not Fall that was released as the single, God, you know what? I'm gonna say it right now. I don't like it. The album version is so much better. The album version starts here and tells a story all the way to the end. Uh-huh. It's got the whole meaning. But of course, when you're trying to get a song played on the radio,
yep,
it's got to be a certain length of time, and they really want you to just, you know, not beat around the bush and just get to the point. Everyone wants to hear the chorus immediately and all that kind of stuff. So I had to edit it a little bit, and I was kind of like, I'm just like, you know, I'm squeezing the life out of the essence of this song here.
Sure.
But luckily enough, I think it still came across, like you say, we still got the gist of it. But the album version for people is going to be when that actual song and the whole story of that song kind of reveals itself properly.
Oh wow! Now I'm very excited.
Yeah.
I can't get enough. Your guys' release date, is it October?
It's now the 6th of November.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, well, because again, it was the usual, you know, with the studio being closed. During lockdown, I still had songs left to sing, so I had to wait a long time to let them open the doors for me. Yeah. Then they basically opened the studio doors for me exclusively, and they set the whole room up like a very socially distanced thing where I couldn't even be in the same room as the engineer and stuff like that. So I managed to get it done. And then, of course, when it went to mastering, we caught the mastering guy just as he was going on his holiday, and then there was a few snags that needed fixed, so I had to come back, and then we missed a lot of deadlines for magazines, etc. So I thought, well, you know what, there's no harm in just holding it back a few weeks, because at least then we can meet all the deadlines for all the various magazines for the promotion campaign leading up to the release. And you know, there's no gigs here anyway this year, so unfortunately, as sad as that is, so it's the thing we've got to focus on is getting the album out in November.
Yeah, fantastic. No, I really miss going to gigs and shows.
You know, so do I.
I'm like,
I don't only miss playing, but I miss actually going out and watching music and just, you know, that whole atmosphere of being at a venue, or you're meeting up with your buddies and having a good time listening to live music, and I especially miss walking out onto the stage to see your fans in front of you. It's just like, it feels like it's been, in fact, it has. I mean, I think it's been almost a year since we've done a gig.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty, pretty horrendous, really, you know.
That's like, not fun.
You know, The skin's starting to grow back on my fingers, starting to soften on my
fingers. Oh no, that's not good.
You guys, you know, and it's like now it's like, ooh, I've been washing too many dishes. That's what it is.
Oh, Alan, it looks like I got an email from you guys. It looks like you guys are going to be doing a full band live stream.
Yes, we are working on that right now. We've been rehearsing for that. We're going to record that, in fact, this week.
Cool.
And we're gonna, you know, just one of those things. The fans have been looking for something. Now, what we do every week is we send out an e-letter to subscribers with our website and things like that and the fan group. And so what we've been doing sort of very quietly, just exclusively for those guys, is we've been... Because you're not touring, you know, there's nothing, you know, we're not going anywhere, we're not on the road. So you have to keep the momentum going. You have to keep people's attention.
Oh, yeah.
You have to make people still aware that you're still there, or, you know, people tend to forget you if you're not there for very long. And so every week we've been having some sort of content to put out with the e-letter. So we've been doing little sort of lockdown acoustic sessions, or, you know, been doing various versions or broken down versions of some of the songs, new and old. We've done we recently did a cover of Amos Lee's Violin, and it went down very, very well with our fans, because I'm a huge Amos fan. You know, I discovered Amos Lee a long time ago when he just brought his first album out, and I actually think I was probably the first person in Glasgow to ever listen to Amos Lee. So I've been a fan ever since, and I always wanted to play that song, and it was suggested to me by a friend who said, maybe do a version of that song. Well, it went down like a storm, man. It was great. So
sounds great.
Things like that we've been doing every week, you know, just putting out a little bit of content. So I thought, well, and we've done one live tune with the full band there. We did, you know, all from separate rooms and everything, which was a kind of cool experience.
Yeah.
You know, when you get into it that way, but I mean, it's not the same as playing together. No. So we're going to go in the studio and we're going to set up and we're going to film it all and record it all. And we're going to do just a live show for people, and just to say, here you go, guys, just have this. And because you haven't seen us for so long, and it's going to be fun. It was nice rehearsing. We rehearsed a day or two ago, and it was nice to catch up with the guys again. And it was just nice to play again. But, you know, wow, it was one of those things. We've not actually played as a band for about 5 months or 6 months together.
That's a long time. That's a long time.
Well, you know, my fingers were hurting. My voice was sore. I was like standing going like, can you turn it down a bit? It's a bit loud.
I'm getting a little lightheaded. Whoa.
Yeah. And we finished rehearsal and we came back up here to the house, and it was like, oh, God. Oh, it's taken out of me, you know. It's like, that's actually, it's like, beat me up that doing that. Like, you know, let's get a beer. But you know what? It was great fun just to play with the lads again. And you know what? For being away for such a long time and not having played together, we were kind of expecting it to be a little bit ropey. But you know what?
Yeah,
the guys just pulled it together really, really easily. And by two or three songs in, we were like, it was like we'd never been away. It all came flooding back, and that thing just started to gel together again, and it all started to work, and I found myself enjoying it again. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to doing the recording and giving it to the people and seeing what they think of it as well, because, you know, there's been such a long time, you know. Yeah. So
I'm so glad. I can't wait till you guys start touring again and you know, getting back. One thing I'm curious, since we've been talking about touring and stuff, what has been your most memorable experience on tour?
You know what? I think that's such a difficult question to answer in one go.
There's a lot that happens.
Yeah, I mean, you know, different things happen for different reasons all the time, and you have good experiences in the most strangest ways and things. But I think, to be honest, you know, looking at it from a universal point of view, I think, you know, walking out onto the stage at Wembley Arena in London to, you know, like 10,000 people, I mean, that was fantastic. I mean, we were the support band to Thunder. In fact, we were the opening act, so we weren't the first support. We were the opening act at this point. But to have having had, you know, done three or four shows previous to this with on that tour, the fans really took to the band. It was just one of those things that just all the stars aligned really, and the music that we played just seemed to capture the Thunder fans, and they understood the music and they kind of got it and they loved us. And then, you know, to be on stage as an opening act in a place that size,
yeah,
and for them, and you can catch it, you can find it on YouTube now as well, which is great. We had literally the entire audience singing one of our songs back to us. And you're thinking, you know, when, you know, let's be honest, when does this happen for an opening act? You know, so things like that. But I mean, another great experience is when we were supporting, we went on tour with Europe. Oh. And on the last night in Madrid, I mean, previous to this, you know, we would walk past their dressing room on their way to the stage, and Joey Tempest would be singing one of the songs to us, as one of our songs to us, as we were walking past his dressing room. And then on the last night in Madrid of the tour, we were singing this, it was our final song of the night, and he walked onto the stage and he took the microphone and he sang my song.
Wow.
You know, so you know, for things like that to happen, I mean, you just feel so lucky, man. You know, you think to yourself, you know what, man, you know, when would any, you know, why do, these guys don't have to do anything like that for us, you know, they don't need to do anything like that, but they've chosen to, and that's it's great, isn't it? What can you say? It's just amazing. So
yeah, your music influences people. It really does. Yeah. I know that, you know, personally for me, you know, I've listened to your albums many times and have got inspiration and energy. There's an energy,
yeah,
about you guys, about yeah, the band, that just,
I think it's the same thing as that, what I've always found when I'm looking, when I enjoyed music from other people, you know, the people that have influenced me, I think we all have one thing in common, and I think that's the thing that draws me to those artists is passion. It's a passion and it's an honesty.
Yep.
And I think that comes across certainly with the, you know, like guys like Frankie Miller that I love. He was always a very, you know, like he bore his soul, you know, on a stage, and you know, and lots of bands like that I've seemed to be drawn to have had the same. And I think it's had an influence on me as well to be that way as well. But I think also, more importantly, I think it has to be there. I think it has to be in you.
Yep.
Be that type of person. And that's fortunately for me, that's kind of who I am.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. I think that's what captivates an audience. I think that's what, because at the end of the day, you know, let's, I'm not, without putting anyone down, we're not reinventing the wheel here at King King. We're not doing anything brand new. But what we're doing is we're making classic music with a complete freshness, with an energy,
yeah,
that I feel that no one else is doing. I think that's the difference between us. You know, I think that's the special thing about King King, is that what we're doing, it's not particularly what we're doing as such, but, you know, but that's not to say I'm not putting down the music, because I think we're writing stronger and stronger songs each and every time, and I think that's getting better and better. But that passion, that energy, that honesty put into the performance, I think is what makes a difference.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you, Alan.
Fantastic. Thank you, sir.
Fantastic. Well, let's, we're running a bit out of time. I'd like you to tell our audience where they can find your upcoming record and when it's coming out.
Okay. Well, the album Maverick will be released on the 6th of November this year, 2020. You can find that on our website, which is kingking.co.uk. You can go on there. You can pre-order now as well. And if you click onto there, you will find lots of variation and types of bundles you can buy. You can order. We have picture vinyl. We have coloured vinyl. We have a bonus CD as well. Going to be there, a little live thing that we're doing. You can pick and choose what you want. But kingking.co.uk. kinking.co.uk. You can find us there. Get on board. Subscribe to the newsletter as well, and you can find out what's happening. You can find little exclusive videos on there as well every week, every Friday.
Awesome, Alan. It has been an absolute joy talking to you. I'm so glad I had the chance to meet you.
Thanks, Justin, man.
What
nice
an honor.
To you, man. Yeah, it's been very cool.
An honor. Alan Nemo from King King on the podcast today. Rock on, Alan. I cannot wait for your album to come out. It is going to kick ass.
Absolutely, man. Let's hope so. And let's hope that, you know, because I do know that we have a lot of fans in the U.S., and I get asked all the time, when are you going to come? When are you going to come? And I trust me, believe me when I say it, we're working on it. We would love to get over there. When the opportunity does, you know, become apparent to us, we will be there and we will come play for you guys, because we know how much support you give us from across the Atlantic. So we haven't forgotten about you. So thank you very much.
Fantastic. I will be at the concert when you come.
Excellent, man. Excellent.
Thanks, Alan. To all of our listeners, rock on.
Thanks for listening to the Guitar Freaks podcast. Check out www.fretdeck.com to help you learn the guitar.